this morning we have another aspect of that of nutrition. In this instance, it's nutrition and how certain behavioral characteristics are directly related to certain foods. We have understood for a long time that chemical imbalances can underlie much of abnormal or unacceptable behavior, and that under the influence of metabolic deficiencies or injuries, we can learn things that then become a part of our personality or a part of our characters. Our thoughts become wrong, then our feelings become wrong, and then our actions will be wrong. Now, the place to work on our characters is then not down where the actions are. Where is the place to work on our characters? Back up with the thoughts. Then the thoughts, which are intimately involved with the way that we feel. Once we correct these, then the behavioral patterns will fall into line. Now, it takes a little while for all of the behavioral patterns to fall into perfect alignment, because of the fact that we do have learned patterns. Not only do such things as foods influence our thoughts, but then our thoughts give us learned behavioral patterns. And these learned behavioral patterns may become almost reflexive, so that when someone says a certain class of thing to you, your response will be automatic. You might hear some sort of little shady joke, and your immediate response would be a reflexive laughter. But immediately after that, you think, oh, that was not what I want to do. And so you're immediately sorrowful, immediately repent, you're immediately forgiven, you're immediately reinstated. All of this can happen in the twinkling of an eye. But the next time, you want to not even have that reflexive action. But it may take a little while for this kind of thing to be revised in your thinking, this kind of impulsive things. We have certain little sayings that we make that are improper, that make us unfit companions for holy angels. But nevertheless, they are built into our language. This may take some time for us to get rid of these things. Now, Seventh-day Adventists have taught for over 100 years that there were certain thought patterns that had to do with the way that we eat. We have taught that mental dullness could result from the eating of fruits and vegetables together at the same meal. Now, some might think, well, that has to do with just those who have digestive problems. Well, maybe so, but that includes 100% of us, because 100% of people these days have digestive problems. So we should put ourselves in the most favorable position that we possibly can to make it so that we don't have metabolic abnormalities resulting from little digestive insufficiencies, which we have inherited maybe for several generations in our families. We have taught also that such things as inattention, reduced intellect, reduced spiritual development, that all of these can come from simply overeating. We are told that a half to a third less than we currently eat would be sufficient for many of us. A half to a third less than we eat, than we currently eat. We should reevaluate these things and see if our retarded spiritual and mental development come from simply overeating. We know that pork and cheese and spices enfeeble the intellect. Seventh-day Adventists have taught this for over 100 years. We have also taught that 9/10 of the wickedness of children have to do with wrong practices of eating and drinking. We're told the same thing about church trials, that many church trials that pastors and church officers have to deal with between the parishioners, that these have to do with wrong habits of eating or drinking. This problem is so serious that we should excuse ourselves from serving on committees if we have not been eating in a correct fashion. we should simply call the pastor and say, "Pastor, please excuse me from the board meeting tonight, but I have been careless or negligent about the way I've been eating, and I'm in no condition to serve on a committee." Now, if everybody did that on the board, it wouldn't be long before we would have much better, much more profitable, much more peaceful, much more substantive board meetings and other committee meetings. We should consider these thoughts very carefully. The Schizophrenia Foundation has discovered that there is a link between violence and trace metals. Now, the Schizophrenia Foundation is not the only one who has found this. I mentioned a little bit yesterday about what has been found by a researcher named Schwartz. I mentioned the fact that such things as calcium, lead, iron, and cadmium have been found to be elevated in those who have violent behavior, and that zinc, lithium, and cobalt are depressed in those who have violent behavior. Very important research now going on in criminality and in criminal circles, indicating that we have much to learn about the kind of diet that we take, the kind of metabolic systems that we have, and many of us are metabolically injured. We are damaged through generations of abuse. We have metabolic injury that results in our handling these trace metals in a wrong way. Therefore, they are stored or they are dealt with in the body in such a wrong way that it isn't long before we are behaving very poorly. This often is evident before the child is 6 months old. Something is causing a problem for the child. And then by the time he is 6 years old, it is very well established. Then by the age of 16, he may be into such things as crime or the drug scene or alcoholism and the like. We can also recognize this, and that is that psychiatry and counseling have a very poor track record in curing these illnesses. Something else, or at least something additional, must be brought to bear on this problem. Well, how big is the problem? Our problem is an extremely large one. No less than maybe 20% of our population, that's 2 out of 10, are uncomfortable most of the time, if not all of the time, because of various psychological or psychiatric problems. Today, our world is filled with discomforts or downright despair, cravings that lead to overeating. One lady said, instead of having a cookie, I wolf down a whole box. And this is this kind of gluttony, uncontrollable gluttony, we find everywhere. It's the most rapidly growing disease in America today. We find its opposite extreme, those who are uncomfortable because they have a poor image of themselves, a distorted, a perverted image of themselves, and they begin to eat an inadequate quantity. Scanty food often leads to real problems. Now, we could separate our various types of mental illness in several ways. Let's just have a little diagram of the various kinds of mental illness that we have. The first that we could say is the affective disorders. Now, the affective disorders are divided into two kinds, manic phases and depressive phases. And many people have both of these together, mania at one time, depression at another. In fact, it is possible to have them both at one time so that a person has an agitated depression. These individuals are indeed quite uncomfortable. Depression represents a large segment of our population. Then we have, of course, the schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is that most disabling and serious of all mental illnesses or psychoses. Schizophrenia causes poor thinking, aberrant type of thinking, so that one is just not thinking straight. One is not thinking in reality. This kind of disorder is very disabling. usually causes the individual to be completely unable to function in society. Many of these people have to, it is impossible to control them in any other way except in a mental institution. Then the next kind of thing that we have is the anxiety disorders. The anxiety disorders include such things as the phobias. Agoraphobia is a big phobia of our day, but there are many kinds of phobias. Some people have phobias of going into the bank. Some people have phobias of going into town. Some have phobias of getting on a high place or getting in an elevator in a closed place. Some people have a phobia of going to church. All manner of phobias these days that people didn't used to have. In fact, the anxiety disorders were not described prior to 1870. Many of these are modern society diseases. The affective disorders. The affect is our mood or the way that we respond emotionally to things. The affective disorders are also relatively new to us. And then we have also the dementias. The dementias would include that deterioration of the mind that comes from such things as hardening of the arteries, viral illnesses of various kinds. It also comes from Alzheimer's disease, whatever that is. No one knows exactly what Alzheimer's disease is. There are many theories as to why we have so much of Alzheimer's disease nowadays. Instead of it's involving merely those who are of advanced old age, we're now finding it in those who are quite young, 30s even, and 40s, but especially in the 50s and thereafter, we have people who just suddenly one day begin to get so that they can't think of they can't pull up from their memory and pretty soon this involves not just one word, but it involves a number. It involves things at all levels. And they get so that they make a phone call to make an order. They dial the number and they get the company on the phone and they have to hang up. They don't remember why they called. This is also disabling and incapacitating. It starts out rather mild often, but in some people it blossoms very quickly. In some people it lasts, their prodromal phase lasts over a number of years, so that it takes years for this to develop. Some people feel that heredity has to do with the development of Alzheimer's disease. Since Down syndrome is quite common in families where Alzheimer's is also quite common, it is now felt that this may be one of the important things. But what makes Down syndrome? We don't know. Maybe it has to do with something that's in our environment. We know for certain that the older a mother or a father are, that the greater the likelihood that the child born in their older age group will have Down syndrome. We are now beginning to think that that is because of repeated small injuries inflicted on the ovaries and testes through many years of abuses or exposures of various kinds. Some have suggested that aluminum might be at fault in this way. Aluminum, we know, does cause certain kinds of dementias. The kind of dementia that results from having dialysis, the so-called dialysis dementia, is associated with aluminum. Aluminum in the water used to wash the various tubes in the dialyzing process. This apparently has quite a good bit of influence on the development of the acute type of psychosis or dementia called dialysis dementia. If aluminum can cause dialysis dementia, it is certain that it could cause some other kinds of dementias as well. So it could be that the dementias are also involved somewhat in environmental or even food sensitivities of various kinds. Now, there are certain foods that are more likely to be involved than other kinds in these various things, as well as them just, these are psychoses, but there are many just neuroses or discomforts that we have that have a little dysfunctioning of the mind, a little disability, but not to the point of being incapacitating. Approximately 8% of people who have been surveyed in this country suffer from the anxiety disorders. About 6 to 7% of the population have a dependency on alcohol or drugs. Some 5 to 6% of our adults have depressive disorders or affective disorders. And I'm sure you're aware that it has been discovered in the last 10 or 15 years that even babies in the cradle, even just after the newborn period, are suffering from emotional depressions. Something new. Why? Why do we have all of these things? Schizophrenia involves at least 2% of our population. Why do we have these? Most youths of our day try alcohol, and about half of them develop heavy drinking after graduating from high school. That comes from Science News for August 4, 1984. Half of those, most of our youth get into drinking, and half of those become heavy drinkers at some time. Now, from Parade magazine for December 23, 1984, we have a whole section on food and mood. And from these tear sheets, I'd like just to read a few things. In a very real way, our mood mirrors our menu. What we eat can cause such strong psychological symptoms as depression, profound tiredness, listlessness, irritability, debilitating headaches, raging hyperactivity outbursts, as well as forgetfulness, inattention, insomnia, mood changes, forgetfulness, confusion, inattention, loss of appetite or sex drive, and severe anxiety. These reactions, though profound, often go unrecognized. We don't even understand that we're having them. We are sick or disabled or uncomfortable, and we don't even realize that we're having a discomfort of any kind. Now, here is another one that tells about the problems that we're having with certain foods in the dairy product group. And I would like to talk with you just a little bit about the problems that are now recognized from dairy products. Here is one from 1979. Certain foods make you talk more. Well, some of us might want a little bit of assistance there. But the most of us want to agree with the Bible injunction of developing a meek and quiet spirit, not talking so much. Especially women are enjoined not to be talkative. I think the counsel was well given to us. Now, there are certain things that we know can increase our talkativeness. Aged cheddar, blue cheese, Silton cheese. These are all good choices if you want to be talkative or if you want to lose control of your ability to just control your talking. Also, pickled herring is another one that can cause a problem. Sour cream, soy sauce, yeast extracts, yogurt, and aged beef. Saffron, sweet basil, pepper, nutmeg, peppermint, salep. Most of the spices like ginger, cinnamon, nutmeg, and cloves, most of these. Generally, if you eat some of these, they will take their effect within 15 minutes of your having eaten them. And we have not even spoken of the methylxanthine group. Now, what is included in the methylxanthine group? What are methylxanthines? Let's just name them. They're four that are common in our foods. Caffeine, theobromine, theophylline, these three. Now, there are four foods that are involved, or four beverages. And what are those four beverages? Coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate. Those four. Now, if we understand that the methylxanthines can do something unusual, unwanted to our personalities, then the Christian person is going to want to eliminate those from his dietary. And the word is eliminate. Don't just dabble with them. Just eliminate them. Most of us are already living, we live in a fast age. We have had our nervous systems irritated since before we were born. We cannot tolerate anything in the way of irritation at this late date in our Earth's history. From the Palm Beach Times for September 20, 1979, we read this. Calmness, kind-heartedness, and clear thinking are not God-given but considerably depending on diet. Well, I would state that a little bit differently, although I understand what the editor here is trying to say. These are God-given, but they may be received by the individual only if he cares enough to have them to prepare for them. We may not have calmness, kind-heartedness, and clear thinking if we do not prepare for it. We will become altered in our thinking. Here is one. This one comes also from 1979. These things are not new. They've been around for a while, these ideas. This one says, heavy milk drinking may cause juvenile crime. Our study, this is just a quote, one sentence from this, our study determined that chronic juvenile offenders consumed nearly twice as much milk as those who were non-offenders in our group. How interesting that is, since most of our children are urged to drink lots of milk, 3 to 5 glasses a day. Our children are urged and even browbeaten a little bit and told that they will be undernourished if they do not take that much. Parents are in the habit of urging and encouraging and insisting that their children take lots of milk. But Alexander Schaus, who wrote the book called Diet, Crime, and Delinquency, a very fine little book emphasizing the diet-behavior connection, he said this, that in the study that they did, chronic male juvenile offenders consumed an average of 64 ounces of milk daily, while a control group of non-offenders drank only 30 ounces daily. 64 by the juvenile delinquents, 30 ounces by the non-offenders. Delinquent females used an average of 35 ounces a day, while non-delinquent females only 17. Now, how different that is from what we might think. We might think, well, it would be important for us to give quite a lot of attention to the drinking of milk. Isn't that the perfect food? Well, I have a lot to make me believe that it is far from the perfect food. Not only does it have quite a lot of microorganisms in milk and in all other dairy products that can give us infectious disease, but there is a lot that has to do with metabolic disorders, such as atherosclerosis and diabetes and even carious teeth coming from the drinking of too much milk. Here is one from Pediatrics, Milk and Peculiar Behavior. This is a letter to the editor. It says, I am writing this letter to inquire whether any of the pediatricians in the academy around the country have encountered behavioral problems associated with ingestion of dairy products. In my practice, I have run into several patients who undergo marked alterations in behavior patterns when ingesting dairy products, and whose behavior is totally changed by the withholding of dairy products. How interesting that is. We had a little patient one time who came to us, 14 years old. The superintendent of schools in Muskogee County had told the mother that she could no longer send this little girl to the public schools. She had torn the schools apart. Her violent behavior had made her the enemy of all the teachers and all the students as well. She had such belligerent behavior that she usually would not even bother to answer questions on her test papers. She would just write her name at the top, turn it in, get a zero back. And the highest grade she had ever gotten was a 60. She had never passed a course. She had never passed a grade, but no teacher would keep her a second year. So she was in the seventh grade at the time that she came to me and was 14 years old. Her mother said that she had heard that we were doing some things with diet and behavior, and she wondered if we could help her daughter. I went over a lot of things with her, including leaving off milk and all animal protein. She took no meat, milk, eggs, or cheese for several months, and then finally just went back to taking very small amounts of chicken and fish, and that just on occasion. Dairy products were permanently eliminated. Sugar was permanently eliminated from her dietary. After a mere 3 months, she was a transformed little girl. When she came into my office the second time, I could hardly believe she was the same little girl who came in the first time. She showed me a test paper that had 100 written at the top. Her mother had had to get private schooling for her because of the fact that the superintendent of the public schools would not allow her to come to that school anymore. So the private school was very delighted to have her, and she graduated as a very good student. She has subsequently finished with college and is planning to be married. Proverbs 26:2 says, the curse causeless shall not come. And if we see some kind of misbehavior in our children, we should look for the cause. We should not say, well, Uncle Jim was also had an evil temper or was given to crime or went into alcoholism. We should not simply shuck these things off in this way, but we should make a deliberate investigation to see if we cannot find some of the things that might be we might be exposing our children to that would be causing some kind of aberrant behavior. Yogurt. In a Consumer's Report for July 1979 on cottage cheese, yogurt was also mentioned in this article. It was found that yogurt would contain just plain milk, but coagulated in a certain special way with certain types of bacteria. Yogurt might also have carrageenan in it, food starch, sorbitol, tragacanth, guar gum, and carmine. Do you see that we're having lots of additives that expose our children to what many people consider to be really good foods? And yet because of this exposure, things may be happening that cause us to have the thing that we just studied about disorders that have just arisen in our population in just the last very few years. In this same report, Consumer's Report for July 1979 on cottage cheese, I would just like to read a few things that would tend to point up some defects in the processing and marketing of cottage cheese. It says it has been accepted as a meat substitute, not only for those priced out of the meat market by inflation, but also many who want to get into a more natural type of diet with less meat protein. 1 billion pounds of cottage cheese are marketed a year. That lets us know that it's in one of the big business types of categories, which can immediately let us know that any of the propaganda that we might hear on cottage cheese may be just that. It may not be entirely true. The general state of affairs was a sorry one back in 1964, and very little has been done to change that since 1964. This finding clearly indicates laxity somewhere along the production distribution line. There's been a breakdown in the maintenance of sanitary controls of ingredients or manufacturing equipment, improper refrigeration, overly long storage, or careless handling. 23 brands of cottage cheese were bought in the New York area, 19 in California, and several others in several other areas. The general state of affairs was bad 15 years ago, but it is still bad, judging from our laboratory findings. Then they go on to tell about the various things that they found. I'll just give a few lines here and there that will illustrate what the article was about. Cleanliness, a sorry tale. That's a headline. Since there are still no mandatory standards for the cleanliness of cottage cheese, no mandatory standards, the presence of coliform bacteria. Now, coliform bacteria are bacteria that have passed from the intestinal tracts, either of animals or of humans. The presence of coliform bacteria indicates possible direct contamination by human or animal fecal material. Coliform counts for cottage cheese should not exceed 10 per gram. Now, gram is just about what would balance on my thumbnail, perhaps. But these Consumers Union consultants found that they would find something like 200,000. Shouldn't exceed 10, but they would find 200,000. They would have allowed 1,000. But if they found 200,000, they would not allow that and still call it wholesome. They found that over 60% of the California ones were not wholesome at all. They also did a report back in 1964 on buttermilk, yogurt, cream cheese, and cottage cheese. And at that time, they indicated by the research done all over the country that these four products, as they are now available to the consumer, cannot be considered to be wholesome products. And this has been about what our expectation has been from the investigative work that we have done through the years with dairy products. Now, the second thing that I would like to talk with you about is that of caffeinated beverages. We have alluded to them already. They contain methylxanthines. But we can understand that there are many other things besides the methylxanthines that cause people to have a problem. Let us take the allergies that come up from chlorogenic acid in coffee. Chlorogenic acid is a very powerful allergen in coffee. But chlorogenic acid is by no means the only one. There are at least 30 known powerful allergens in this group of beverages, coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate. Here is one from a few months ago. Caffeine affects women's memory. This was a report of impaired memory in women who drink coffee. And if they leave the coffee off, after a few years, and it does, they don't recover immediately, but after a few years, their memory improves again. Now, they will have some improvement of memory right away, but it takes, for full recovery to occur, takes many years for this for us to completely recover. And I think this has to do with the habit of having poor memory. You know, we can learn to have a good memory, or we can learn to have a poor memory. By inattention to details, which we get from drinking coffee, we habituate ourselves to a poor memory. This takes years to recover from. This is the same with most of the psychological problems that are associated with foods. We can learn to be irritable or anxious or frank to the point of rudeness under the stimulus of various foods. And this may take us years to recover from the habit patterns that we have developed because of the eating of certain foods. Here is one, a report from the Journal of Abnormal Psychology. This is 1984. Caffeine causes anxiety, depression, and hostility. These would be all affective disorders, as we had talked about earlier. The affective disorders, even to the point of requiring hospitalization in these individuals. From Internal Medicine News for April 14, 1984, a relationship was discovered between coffee drinking and high blood pressure. Now, high blood pressure, it is known, is associated with stressful conditions, but here is one that lets us know that some of our foods or drink can also be stressful. Coffee drinkers also were more likely to be overweight. They were more likely to consume alcohol and cigarettes. They were more likely to have a lower occupational status. Now, what does that mean to you? If a coffee drinker has a lower occupational status with the same educational and sociologic background, what would you think about the coffee? You would think that it impairs the functioning of the mind, wouldn't you? Something about it makes it so that the person is not as high achiever as the individual who uses no coffee. So I would like to recommend that we take no coffee. Coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate can all injure the mind. Here is one from the Journal of Nutrition. This is volume 112. Coffee consumption during pregnancy, subsequent behavioral abnormalities in the offspring. The earlier in life a person is exposed to caffeine or to the caffeinated beverages, the more likely serious behavioral problems might occur. Caffeinated beverages do nothing good for the unborn child. And we recommend that this kind of information be disseminated everywhere so that everybody can know, every pregnant woman can know that she is harming her unborn child, not with a cleft palate nor a club foot, but something much more subtle, something that has to do with the mind, but may be much more disabling to the person than a club foot or a cleft palate. Psychological abnormalities are often much more disabling to the total functioning of the individual. Here is one about coffee drinking and cancer of the lower urinary tract. If a woman takes as little as one cup of coffee per day, she has a 3 times greater likelihood of developing cancer of the bladder. And cancers of the prostate are also known to be associated with coffee drinking, and a number of other cancers are also known to be associated in this way. Now, back to the article from Parade, it sums up a number of things that I would like to talk with you about. One is that something that we've already talked about in our previous discussion, that of sugar. Sugar can cause a number of problems, such as the sugar blues or depression, which we talked about yesterday. But sugar can cause a variety of malfunctioning psychological problems. Yeast is another common food that is a food mood culprit. And it is present in a wide range of foods and drinks, baked goods, alcoholic beverages, vinegar. Where do we find vinegar? Pickles, mayonnaise, mustard, ketchup, even in bread. What is that? Yes, salad dressings of various kinds, fermented foods of various kinds, cheeses, mushrooms, dried fruits. Many patients who complain of food sensitivities or who have problems that we can point to a food with, this is the thing that we find, the yeast problems. Amino acids, someone might say, but amino acids are really good for us, aren't they? Shouldn't we pack in as many as we can? There are now pills that you can take to supplement your amino acids. Should we not take these so that we can so that good things can happen to us? And the answer to that is no, indeed. The problem is not to get plenty of amino acids. The problem is to get them in the proper balance and also in the proper balance with our other foods. And we find that people think better if they have a high carbohydrate diet, provided it is an unrefined carbohydrate diet. They do far better on a high carbohydrate diet than they do on a high protein diet. So let us push the carbohydrates. These are the ones that our divine designer made the most plentiful for us anyway. So let us push these, and let us not get into the amino acids in a heavy way. Tryptophan is an amino acid which has to do with the production of serotonin. Serotonin has to do with creating such things as cheerfulness, alertness, staying awake in meetings, and a number of things of this nature. This can be very helpful to us to have a lot of serotonin. Serotonin is made from tryptophan. Where do we get tryptophan? Well, we can get it from bananas. We can get it from many fruits. Greens are especially high in some greens are high in tryptophan. Collards are. then nuts also are high in tryptophan. But we don't want to emphasize any of these in the diet. We want to have a balance, because if we have too much, then certain other of the amino acids can so interfere with tryptophan that we actually have a shunting wholesale of tryptophan in another direction, so that the net result is a reduction in the production of serotonin. So again, we should emphasize the fact of its being balanced, not being just high in one thing. Tyrosine is another crucial amino acid. Tyrosine makes another kind of neurotransmitter in the brain. This is adrenaline and dopamine. Now, dopamine, as you probably know, has to do with keeping us from getting schizophrenia, apparently. People with schizophrenia have a reduction in dopamine in the brain. Should we then use lots of tyrosine as an amino acid supplement in our diet? The answer is no. Probably all we need to do is to keep from overusing tyramine. Tyramine blocks or interferes with the utilization of tyrosine, which is the amino acid. And we find undesirable quantities of tyramine in such things as sour cream, aged cheese, beef, Chianti, beer. But just in case you might think that it's only in the animal products or the fermented products, you should also know that it's in very ripe avocado. So don't overdo the avocado. You can use some, but just don't overdo it. Now, of course, not only are psychological problems caused by food intolerances, but also certain physical illnesses are caused by food intolerances. These would include such things as arthritis, ulcers, skin and nerve disorders, and a wide array of digestive problems as well. This article in Parade is quite interesting. Here is a section on chocolate. I was very glad to see that. Talks about the relationship of chocolate to obsessive compulsive behavior, lethargy, depression, anxiety, and the like. Vitamins. Certain vitamins, when they're in excess, cause psychological problems. Certain ones, when they're in deficiency, cause problems. Low levels of B1, B6, and vitamin C have been linked to depression or sudden mood changes. Vitamin B12 lack has been associated with confusion, inattention, forgetfulness, and so forth among elderly individuals. Headaches, lethargy, anxiety, all of these are caused by foods that we're sensitive to, getting too much of a food, or having too little of a nutrient. Now, so far as allergies are concerned, one of the important things that we would want to think about would be that of what kind of test would you use to check to see whether you have an allergy. There are several kinds that are in constant and common use in the United States. Probably the commonest of these is the scratch test, where a scratch is made on the back and an antigen to a certain food, or a certain food is just smeared on that area and covered with a little piece of adhesive. Then another scratch made, another food smeared on, and another piece of adhesive. This goes on. We might do 50 or 100 of these on the back of an individual. Then if the person reacts with redness and a wheal around it, we know that the person is sensitive to that. The only problem is, that's very simple when you say it, but the only problem is that it misses very important things that we may be intensely allergic to. And it tells you that you're allergic to something that you've never been exposed to even once in your whole life. And so, of course, you couldn't be allergic to it, or it'd be highly unlikely that you would be allergic to it. So these kinds of things make it very confusing. We do not feel that the scratch test is a very good one. The next one is the cytotoxic screen. This one has more recently come into widespread use, where a blood sample is taken and the reaction of the white blood cells to certain food antigens that are mixed with it is observed, and this then is considered to be a good test to see whether the person is allergic to a variety of foods. But again, the only trouble is that this is a very subjective test, and depending on the technician involved, one may discover allergies that are not present, or may miss an allergy that is present. Then another one is the sublingual test. In this test, a certain amount of the antigen is put under the tongue, and then the person is observed for his reaction. And some allergists like this, but again, it is very subjective. There are many things other than what you put under the tongue that can influence the individual, and we feel that it too is not a very reliable one, and is of course not the kind of thing that the person could do for himself. Whereas an elimination diet is something that you can easily do yourself. And eventually you're going to have to test yourself in this way anyway, so we recommend that you just start out from the beginning with this kind of thing. Now, it too is not foolproof, but it is something that you can do without expense to yourself, and it has a very great likelihood of giving you good results. What you do is this. You get a list of those foods that are most likely to be involved in food sensitivities. And we have a list in our little booklet called the Health Emphasis Seminar Syllabus. And in this booklet, we have the top 10 food sensitivity groups. Top 10 groups of foods. And I'll just read these for you. The first one, by far and away, the commonest cause of food sensitivities in America is milk and dairy products. That's number one. Number two is coffee, tea, chocolate, and colas. Number three is citrus fruits and juices. Number four, the small grains. That would include wheat, rice, oatmeal, and also corn. Corn may be the most frequent sensitivity among the grains. Then the fifth one is that of the nightshade group. What are the nightshades? Tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, and peppers. The sixth group is that of certain fruits, strawberries, bananas, and apples. Now, most people, when they look at the fact that these three plus citrus fruits are on the list, they think, what else is left? But there are still many things left besides these four fruits that are listed. There are pears, peaches, nectarines, olives, avocado, grapes, raisins, prunes, and on and on. That we haven't even gotten to the typically tropical fruits. So there are many, many different fruits that can be used if these are not on the diet. Cane sugar, honey, syrup, molasses, and artificial sweeteners are the next group. The next one is eggs. Next group is eggs, beef, fish, and pork. That would effectively exclude all animal products. Most animal products are quite capable of causing you to have a problem. Peanuts, all legumes, all nuts, all seeds. It is being narrowed down, isn't it? Then the last group is the flavoring group plus lettuce. That would be garlic, onion, lettuce, spices, flavorings, fats. Many people get a sort of inattention or confusion with fats. If they use free fats, that would be margarine, mayonnaise, fried foods, and cooking fats. Colorings of various kinds. Yeast and all yeast products. Salt. I've had many patients who have gotten headaches from taking salt. Migraines should be always treated by eliminating salt as part of your investigative effort to find what it is that causes migraines. Alcohol, beer, and wine. Now, those are the 10 food groups. Now, what you must do when you're checking a person is to eliminate all of these foods at one time. If you will do that, you will get finished with your being a diet kitchen for 18 or 20 months, you will get finished with this process in about 2 or 3 months. That's certainly a great blessing. Then, once the symptoms have disappeared, you start adding the foods back one every 3 to 5 days until a symptom recurs. Let's say it's fatigue. You add the foods back, then suddenly, after you've added about the second or third one, you come down with an overwhelming case of fatigue. Well, maybe that last food that you added was the thing that causes your fatigue. So make another list of those things that you suspect of causing your symptoms. You will retest them at a later time. But right now you're making a tentative list. So you go through, make this tentative list. Then after you have gotten all the foods back that you're going to, I hope you never add chocolate, tea, colas, and coffee. Hope you never add those, nor alcohol and wine, nor any of the animal products. But if you add back all that you plan to, then you should retest those foods that you have on your tentatively offensive list and see if indeed they do show that kind of reaction a second time. Now, so far as the symptoms of allergic disability are concerned, they include a wide variety of things. That would be, number one, learning disabilities and other neurologic problems, poor concentration. Even such serious things as epilepsy might be involved. Then the second thing is that of skin problems. Anything from pallor and dark circles or bags under the eyes to acne and full-blown dermatitis or eczema. Then the third is that of respiratory tract symptoms. That would be coughs, colds, sore throats, sinusitis, and asthma. We have a number of patients with severe and disabling asthma who have improved remarkably just by adjusting the diet. The next thing is that of bedwetting problems in both adults and children. 80% of bedwetting problems can be eliminated in children if you will discover the food to which they are sensitive. Stuttering. Several cases of stuttering have been found to be associated with the drinking of milk. Cystitis is another one. The sixth group is that of leg aches, growing pains, restless legs. The seventh group is backache. Much backache is related to problems with foods, musculoskeletal symptoms, arthritis. The eighth group is that of headache, tinnitus or ringing in the ears, dizziness, and blurred vision. Aphthous ulcers also can be caused. Those are the ulcers that occur inside the mouth. They also may be due to food sensitivity. Then the tenth group is that of indigestion, gas, constipation, peptic ulcers. A variety of gastrointestinal symptoms are related to food sensitivities. And cravings. Now, food cravings are the kinds of things that alcoholics get when they go on a binge. That's one kind of thing. The person simply cannot control himself. He goes off and goes on to a binge. He may not do it if he doesn't take one sip, but if he takes one sip, he is into a binge. Now, another kind of alcoholism is the person who drinks every day, never misses, drinks every single day. These two kinds of alcoholics represent two kinds of cravings. You should recognize whether you have one kind or the other, the binge kind or the persistent overeating kind, and change your habits. In summary, I would like to say that what we eat can strongly influence our behavior. And for your consideration, I would like to say this, that under the influence of foods that harm us, we develop thought patterns, reaction habits that make us unfit for fellowship with holy angels and to stand in the presence of a holy God. This may be changed. Let us begin today to determine that if we know something that injures us, we will stop using it altogether in our diet. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and contingent financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.